Welcome everybody to the Kazumatsuri Clannad Book Club Podcast. With Clannad having just released on Steam, we at Kazumatsuri are joining together and reading the Visual Novel together as a community, while sharing our thoughts and engaging in discussion on the forum. We've all been super excited to get started with this book club, and now that the podcasts have started, we can finally start bringing that discussion together and get some really interesting talks happening here. Today we're going to be starting off by talking about the common root, also known as the baseball root.
Today we're going to be talking about baseball! Baseball!
And more baseball!
Here today we have the three main hosts of the Clannad Book Club podcast.
I am Pretty Dog, Aspiety. We also have Biscuit Dough.
Ooh, you are Pretty Dog too?
And we have Pepe.
It's Miracle!
If you're unsure what this is or what you're doing here, you can click this link here in the video, or click the link in the description of this podcast, which will take you to our introduction video where you can learn more about the Clannad Book Club and learn how you can get involved. So before we get started, let's just have a quick look at the historical context of Clannad's release, as told by our host, Pepe.
Yo, yo. Okay, so Clannad, whatever, was first released in...
Yeah, the pronunciation. Let's talk about that.
Oh. Clannad was released in 2004. It was actually...
Clannad, damn it.
Yes.
It's Clannad.
Whatever.
No, this is important. Clannad. Everyone keeps giving me shit about
down.
This.
Clannad is life, okay?
Clannad.
It's Clannad, guys. Everyone says Clannad.
The katakana says Clannad.
Clannad, yes.
That's the correct one.
That's Clannad. Yeah. So, if you take out the unnecessary vowels in English, that becomes Clannad. It's not Clannad.
This is going to be the new debate of the century. The great Clannad debate.
Clannad. Anyway.
As you were.
As I were, okay. So, Clannad was released first in 2004. And it was actually delayed. I didn't really know the news back then, but I heard from sources that it was delayed. It was supposed to be released in 2003. But it eventually released in 2004, around April. Pretty good timing, actually, since that's also when the game starts in April. Anyway, so it was first released as a first press edition with no voices, and yeah. And they eventually released a regular edition the same year, also with no voices. And then fast forward 3 years.
640x480 resolution.
Oh yeah, 640x480 resolution. Very small, the same resolution as Air and Canon. Then fast forward 3 years into the future, we had the release of the Clannad movie, which everyone wants to remove from their memories. And a few months later, they had the Clannad animation by Kyoto Animation, which was 2007, 2008, which was a pretty damn good adaptation. And then
popular.
Yeah, and I guess in celebration of the anime or whatever, they re-released Clannad in full voice. So since the original didn't have voice, they now put in voice and they upped the resolution to 800x600, I believe. Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so that was in 2008, like a month or so after the anime finished airing. Now, fast forward 5 years later, we now have Clannad on Steam! Huzzah!
Huzzah!
And to be released in the physical edition.
I mean, if this release order has taught you anything, be sure to look forward to the re-release of Angel Beats First Beat in 4K.
Oh my god.
I would throw my money at that. I would so throw my money at that.
But yeah, obviously Clannad is quite an old series, it's already 11 years old, and after all this time, the game is finally coming to English shores. English shores, that doesn't make sense.
English-speaking
audiences. Yes, we'll go with that.
English, yes. Yes.
But yeah, obviously this is a huge deal, but that's not the only way the game was available, was it, Pepe?
Yeah, a long time ago in the VN community far, far away... There used to be a fan patch for Clannad, and I played that fan patch. It was... Let's just say it doesn't compare to the current translation.
I played about half of it. I thought it was readable, but there were some parts where...
It was readable, but it doesn't compare. It just simply doesn't.
No.
But yeah,
just forget about it at this point.
Ticket-kun, best girl, by the way.
It's a lot of people that would have experienced a VM back in its infancy with that fan translation. But I think most people know Clannad through the anime, which have kind of gained worldwide success and appeal. It's on, like, was it on Netflix? I think it's...
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's where I first
saw. Yeah, so different streaming services around the world, broadcast it. I don't know if it's been on television. Probably in some countries it has. There's also, like, the DVD...
Probably in the Philippines it has.
Yeah, so it's, like, the DVD and Blu-ray releases. Like, it's everywhere. And, like, you can just ask people who may have a minimal exposure to anime, and many will know about Clannad. That's, like, how big the name is. Everyone... It's, like, synonymous with heavy emotions, I guess.
I had friends in college who I didn't even know liked anime, both male and female, and they're like, oh, I watch Clannad, and I'm like... okay, cool.
And so now, after all this time, many of us are experiencing the visual novel for the first time and kind of going back to the source material, and now we can see how it sort of stands on its own as opposed to the anime and, like, get a better feel for all the characters' like inner thoughts and all the detail that was lost in the anime and in the anime adaptation. Stuff like Capay, who was a character that didn't even appear in the anime but had the entire route in the visual novel.
Yep.
Yeah, having gone through Common, it's definitely a very different experience. The presentation is one thing. Like, the intro to Clannad, like, the anime was really good, but the VN intro here was so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The intro to this VN is the best out of any of the key VNs. Like, flat out, it's the best.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I have no doubts about that, Biz.
The credits on the screen.
I love that.
Oh my
god. Tomoya
and then it goes to the
walking,
sky
complaining
and this is
about
like
his
key.
Life.
Oh.
Oh yeah, that was the best part.
You know, shout outs to Sekai Project for making all of this possible. You know, they had that Kickstarter, which was a massive success. Like, it was something in the round of $500,000 for funding. And they met all their stretch goals, so we got the HD, all the assets from the console versions, ported to the Steam version, which is all the HD assets,
Slohara
the full voice
HD.
Acting, the achievements, the we even got a new soundtrack. How awesome is that? No one saw that coming.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Nobody saw that coming.
So this is definitely the definitive release of Clannad.
Definitive,
you know,
Clannad. Absolutely.
Until it maybe when it gets released in Japan, like in Japanese, and the Japan will consider it the definitive release as well. But for the moment, we have pretty much the best version of Clannad, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Never imagined a day in my life where it would be released in English in such amazing quality.
Mm-hmm. So before we start getting too deep into the analysis, why don't we do a little bit of a fun game? And we're going to have Bizgato describe the entirety of the common route in under 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Resident champion. All right. Let's get ready. All right.
Show me what you're made of.
Tell me when.
3, 2, 1, 0.
This week on Maida, our simply misunderstood protagonist goes to school late and happens across his would-be soulmate in the process because good things come to those who wait. With his douchebag friend, he wanders around aimlessly for 2 weeks, learns that bread gives you some whack-ass dreams, and keeps running into alternative soulmates on the regular and somehow failing to say any of the right things. Having lived an utterly menial life up until now, he agrees to a trial by combat against his apathy with some good old baseball and brings happy memories to all involved.
Good work, good work. So, walking into this vision for the first time, I'm sure you guys have plenty of first impressions to share. Like, let's talk about the opening, like you were just talking about, Biz. So we start off with the scene in the so-called illusionary world, where it's completely unexplained at that point, but we're covered in snow, and we're holding the hand of a girl, and we're stuck together in that sorrowful... That empty, sorrowful world, I think they call it.
The world where nothing lives.
It's definitely like this, like it's a snow blindness thing. It's just white. Everything is white.
Yeah.
And you have like these few kind of bits of structure in there.
I really love how they...
Very interesting scene.
Yeah, actually there was,
the music.
Actually, this ties into Carafine's key point. He writes to us, the very first thing we see in Clannad is a scene in the illusionary world, an empty, sorrowful world covered in snow. What purpose does this kind of beginning serve? What's its atmospheric value? Would the beginning feel vastly different if this scene hadn't been there? Or is it more on the out of place and worthless side? So what do you think about that?
I think...
Go, Biz.
From someone who doesn't know about Keyworks, I guess, it would probably be kind of confusing. And I'm pretty sure that 9 times out of 10, it would probably be something that someone forgets about. Like, you wouldn't even notice it at first. Like, if you didn't actually stop to think about it, you would just start running through routes and stuff, and you would completely forget about that original first scene, and it wouldn't come back to hit you until maybe later, right? Like, it seems like something you'd forget about. But why would there be something pointless in a book, right? Like, there's no reason for them to just put something pointless at the beginning. So I would say, you know, 9 times out of 10 is probably... 10 times out of 10 is probably something, you know, valuable. And to take note of, but whether people will view it critically or not,
it's so disconnected to the main story, though. Like, all of the illusionary world scenes are, that you just can't help but wonder, why is this here? Yeah, what's this doing here? Like, why is this side story?
And I think that's exactly what we're all supposed to think. Like, you're supposed to be like, what the fuck is this? Like,
why is this here? More takes a backseat once you get started on the meat of the VN. Like, it's definitely there, and people can't necessarily forget it. I don't think anyone who's reading about Clannad will forget, oh, I forgot about this illusionary world thing. But
only the first scene. Only the first
scene. Well, yeah, maybe the first scene. But anyway, it's not...
Some people probably, like, make a save, like, right after the intro and then not go back.
Yeah, true. But yeah, I wouldn't say, in regards to Carafrain's key point, I wouldn't say it'd be vastly different if they removed it. But it's definitely something that people might keep in the back of their minds. Like,
Love it.
When it becomes important, then people will realize the value of this thing.
It's such a cool thing about your presentation in a visual novel and something like this, where you can have kind of this weird stark contrast. But, like, the reason that it can also become, like, a forgettable scenario is because it fades, like, seamlessly into Tomoya's, like, monologue, like, in the beginning of the VN. Like, the entire beginning is just a credit sequence, right?
Yeah.
Which we already talked about how cool it is. And, like, it's, like, one big thing, but there's two parts, you know? It's, like, you have the illusionary world, and then you have the walking up the hill, right? So it's... It could be very easy to forget that, I think. But it's definitely a point of interest, and it's definitely there for you to think about.
I just love the existence of the illusionary world. It adds a sort of intrigue to the story that you don't have really without it.
Yeah.
One thing I love about Key is the way that they're able to blend these elements of, like, fantasy, supernatural storytelling with a more mundane setting and still...
That's true. That's something I also saw in Rewrite.
At these very good low points, where you're just kind of, things are getting kind of, you know, daily. It's like at the end of every day or every other day, whenever you actually get to see one, and it kind of snaps you back out of kind of the day-to-day rigmarole, common root stuff, and then it's like, oh, there's something else happening here.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot to think about.
It keeps interest. It's a very smart way to keep interest in something that's super dragged out, you know?
Something some of our listeners may not have noticed, if you are following our walkthrough too strictly. If you go and look and you try deliberately to get a bad ending, did any of you try this?
A little bit, yeah. But
basically,
I didn't deliberately.
If you get a bad ending in the common route, it takes you back to the scene at the start in the snow, and that's how it ends. In this empty, sorrowful world.
Then
you go back to the title screen. I thought that was so cool. It just really hammers in that this scene is important. Don't forget about this scene. We don't know what it means yet, but it really does distill this... Not distill, instill this sense of, I guess, despair and hopelessness at the very end of a route. It's very interesting. There's not a lot we can say about
The way it's placed, I think, is very good because it offers people who like to overthink things, people like us, I guess, a chance to stop and, you know, try and figure out what the hell is this. But it's also very subtle in that people who want to get started with, like, the daily life of Clannad can keep it on the backseat. Like I said, it just stays in their memory probably, and they can like not pay attention to it until it becomes important. But in the meantime, they can enjoy the rest of the novel. So it's very well placed, I think.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on from that, we have Tamoya's monologue and the rising up the hill.
I love that. I love that scene.
I hate this town.
But you can say I hate this scene. I was like, what?
Can't hate that scene, terrible. Man.
I just hate it. I stopped reading the VN right after I started.
His negativity is just so... It's so amusing to read. Like, oh, if I could just cut the wall through this mountain, I could save 20 minutes. It's like, he's idly thinking about ways to make his hate about this town go away. And then he sees a girl who is just apparently monologuing to herself. And he kind of forgets all about the negativity that was in his mind and, you know, just stops and stares at her.
It's like he gets distracted.
Yeah, it's a distraction. Yeah,
exactly.
So he's just like, wait, what? Like he's now that something has his attention, he's not like trapped in his little prison mind.
Hey,
you know?
Hey, a cute girl that is also alone like me.
It's a really good relatability to these two characters, like instantly. It's like they're both late, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, well, she seems to care more about being late than I do.
Yeah.
So they're both late, they're both talking to themselves, and they both seem to, like, kind of have this weird, not necessarily, like, existential, but, like, they both have this weird, like, she has apprehensiveness, whereas he's kind of just careless.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, kind of as, like, a weird kind of outside viewpoint, I guess, Tamoya just kind of is, he understands more what she should be doing.
Like, from an outside perspective, this is such a nothing scene. Like, it's just two strangers just meet and exchange a word and then go up the hill, you know? Like, there's nothing much to it, but it's what this scene accomplishes and what it develops for these two characters that makes it so important in the context of Clannad. I think that's really... Like, it was maybe a little bit overplayed in the anime. I think a lot of people on the forum were complaining about just, like, this is, like, way too dramatic camera pans and stuff, but... In the VN, it's a bit more subdued.
I think people were complimenting the anime, actually.
I know there was at least one person anyway. Was like, the anime overdid this.
Okay.
It's pretty slick. Like, I like the, and then we start the long walk or whatever the intro is, because it really is the beginning of the VN, right? And you're going to go through a humongous amount of shit to actually, like, get through to continue on, you know, the story, so... It's a very adequate beginning, you know.
I like how he just suddenly gives her advice to, you know, keep finding things that are fun, because it's so ironic, like, that he can give.
Why am I saying
it's,
this?
It's total irony.
Because it's a cute girl, though.
Yeah, pretty much.
he even admits that. We don't see entirely what's in. Oh yeah, he does admit that.
He does admit, yeah, that he just thought she was cute.
That's one thing I noticed from Tomoya's interaction with Nagisa, is that he likes her from the get-go. He thinks she's cute, and he likes her personality, something like that.
That's true, yeah.
Like, he cares for her personality.
Yeah, definitely. Like, they haven't...
You don't see that reaction with other girls, that's for sure.
No, you don't. It is very interesting that he's just immediately attracted to her like that. Bam. But one scene, one line that specifically stuck out to me in this opening was something that wasn't present in the anime, and that's the line, I remember those days, what it felt like to be naive, simple. This is like a little bit of inner monologue of Tamoya that wasn't present in the anime adaptation there. But it really shows how... Not so much looking down on, but Tamoya is in a position where he can look at Nagisa and see something of himself from his past. A youthful innocence that he doesn't have anymore. And one of the forum members, sorry, I can't remember who, commented that, this shows a side of Tamoya that's a little bit sad, that he's lost his innocence, like something horrible must have happened to him to be able to think about someone that way.
It's like... Like I was saying about apprehensiveness, like, she has, like, a kind of a weird apprehensiveness, but, like, you can tell that she has a goal. Like, she wants to go to school, Whereas he's the opposite. Like, he no longer has that actually wanting to go. He's just going because he has to, because of attendance.
Or yeah.
Yep.
Like, he's just kind of gotten past that to where he's just kind of going with the flow. And it really sets up the idea of him kind of giving up in his state, but seeing someone else who hasn't yet really given up. And him kind of having that incentive of, hey, you don't want to become me, so...
Yep.
Actually yep. do something with your life, you know?
He knows what he's doing is wrong, but he can't do it.
It was TRBO that made that post, by the way.
Okay.
Turbo.
Shoutouts to him. Turbo. All
right. Yeah. So, yeah. The setting is a lot better than I remembered it to be, because I just remembered it to be a mundane school life setting, but now I'm remembering, it's... Everything is about Tomoya and how he views this mundane school life.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it is mundane. Because then we go into the more... We go into the rest of the comedy, which is largely comedy scenes.
Yeah, true.
Comedy scenes and character introductions. And so then we introduce Sunoharu, which is the ultimate idiot and the butt of every joke in the series. And it's
asshole idiot.
The punching bag.
The punching bag. Yeah. The butt monkey.
See,
the
like,
true butt monkey. Butt monkey.
There's kind of this weird, like, question as to whether or not Sunoharu is to be considered a bro or not, right? I don't really consider him, at least not in this stage, I don't consider him a bro. Like, Tomoya is, like, the not necessarily a delinquent, and then Sunoharu is literally a delinquent.
Yep.
And because of their social standings, they just so happen to both end up talking to each other on a regular basis.
Yeah, yep. But Yerian does make an interesting point in the forum that you can't discredit the fact that if Sunoharu wasn't there, and if he wasn't there for Tomoya to spend his time with every day to have
he's
a refuge
an excellent
to escape
distraction for Tomoya.
His dad, yeah, yeah. Like
he his provides presence him an accomplishes avenue a lot. To provides and him
even,
an avenue
even
to
Tomoya
escape.
Says,
I think
even Tomoya says a lot, or he's like they're not necessarily friends.
Oh, he says flat out they're not friends. Many times.
Yeah.
they're
both of them keep denying this. They keep dancing around the fact and that, like, we're not friends.
There and are countless occasions where Tomoya just, like, flat out, you can tell he just does not give a shit about whatever Sunohara wants to do. Like,
I mean, Sunohara's a fucking idiot. I think in those cases, I would do the same thing. I'm like, I don't want to have to do anything
like,
with what
goes
you're
around,
doing right
like,
now.
Bullying. He goes around, like, bullying underclassmen and taking stuff and, like,
yeah.
being a total dickhole.
Like, dickhole.
He's the worst.
Not just a dick, a dickhole.
So bad. God. But, like, the comedy in it is, like, seeing all of his shit fail, right? Like, that's what's so funny.
Yeah.
And, like, watching, yeah. like, the whole, whenever he's, like, messing with freaking Tomoya, and Tomoya is this just there to watch, basically, and, like, there's these perfect little interactions between him and her where he's just kind of like, he just kind of like nods like, yeah, he's that stupid.
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm just
yeah.
I'm just here to watch you kick this dude's ass.
Totally worth it, by the way.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's totally just an observer to Sunohara's crazy antics.
He never does any crazy antics himself. Well, at least not that early in the game.
Yeah.
But when that's he does, he's pretty serious good, about it.
There is a very good development opportunity, though, for Sunohara in that regard, where we basically can only view him in this certain kind of light, so it's interesting to see whether or not there can be anything to come out of it.
Yep.
Shoutouts to the Sunohara ending, which completely flips everything on its head.
Yeah, I wonder how many of our listeners actually went for that Sunohara ending. You'll be scarred. You'll know how important his hee sound effect is after finishing that ending.
I want to talk about it. That was part of the reading.
let's talk
See,
about
do you
it.
Remember,
yeah,
do you
I thought it was
that,
funny.
That scene whenever they're plugging in the game console, and Tomoya has the plug, and he just shoves it into Sunohara's ass. That's a very important part of the Sunohara ending.
Yeah, it is. Oh my god.
Go
if
read
you make
it
that haven't. Face again, I'll seriously kiss you. Oh, there it is again. That was the funniest part.
Oh my god.
One thing I always look forward to in the VN is if nothing else works out, at least Sunahara is there.
Joke ending aside, it takes a lot of effort to get to that ending because you have to show a little bit of interest in every girl and then deny them right at the last minute. It makes you realize that I've met all these girls, but nothing compares to my Sunohara.
Yeah, it definitely is like an Easter egg.
Yeah, true.
Before guides existed, it was definitely something that you literally had to go out of their way to get to.
Also, shout out to Jet Saito. It's fucking weird. It's such an absurd scene.
It's basically just Sunohara trying to fuck around with Tomoya and like, hey, I found a jet skier. What?
I kind of interpret it as fucking the logic of the world breaking down at that point.
Because you don't want
it to. It was very strange, and it's like impossible to animate, so it's understandable.
The world is fighting against you because you are going against your fate to join Sunohara. That is the explanation.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Go read it. It's fucking weird.
That's the only words we have.
Anyway, so let's talk about the characters for a bit. Like, what characters stood out to you? We don't really have time to talk about all of them, but who do you like the most so far?
Okay, I guess I'll start.
Misai and Tomoyo.
Okay. Well, Nagisa, we already talked about that, but she's really just so innocent, and it's like, you kind of get this feel, I don't know if a lot of other people get this feel, but it's like, kind of, hey, I want to protect that smile because she's so innocent sort of feel, and I think that's what Tomoya is feeling. Okay, so that's my impression of Nagisa. For Tomoyo, I thought she's a pretty cool character, and I kind of consider her a gap moe. I don't know if people understand that concept, but like, she's very aloof, but at the same time, she's also trying to work hard to become reliable, to become the kind of person people can depend on, and yet she can't adapt to situations like Sunohara being an idiot. Like she kind of takes Sunohara's jokes too seriously, and yeah, it's
I just like that she generally gives no fucks. Like, she just does what she wants.
True.
She even just like makes, she kind of mocks societal expectations of people, and I love that side of her.
Mocks them, but at the same time tries to appeal to them.
In a way, she appeals to them when it's beneficial to her, but the ones that are unnecessary, it's just like, yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Then who else?
Man, that whole baseball match.
Oh, well. We'll talk about that later.
She is certainly obsessed with her own femininity, I'll give you that.
Yes. The same way that Cape, by the way, is obsessed with his masculinity. It's a nice counter-example.
I still don't know what to think of Cape. He's a complete mystery to me, but I like
it. It's hard to think about him without his route. He's crazy. In the common, you don't get much yet in the common. But yeah, he's pretty likable, I think, as far as character goes.
Just a little bit psychotic.
He seems like someone who like is kind of just jumping headfirst into whatever. Like,
he tries his best.
Going to job interviews that he does not think about whatsoever with a blank resume. Just like, yeah, I'm gonna go get a job. He's like the Sunohara that actually does things.
Yeah. Okay, after Cape, I guess Cape is a notable one because he wasn't in the anime. Fuko, I found, I'm neutral about her except for the fact that she's really fun to bully. If I knew a person like that in real life, I would bully her. I would stick juice up her nose. No questions asked.
I like Fuko for her interactions with Tomoya, because like, I like how Tomoya views her. Like, in the reasons for why he chooses to interact with her on certain occasions. Like, I actually really like that. It feels like it benefits Tomoya's character a lot. Like, you can't call a dude a douchebag whenever he sees a girl who's, like, hurting herself trying to do things, and he's like, hey, like...
Yeah.
Hey, some people call them a douchebag because of that.
No, I think that's a very admirable trait.
Okay, then. True. I agree with you, actually. Alright, who else stood out for me?
Ryo is Ryo.
Ryo is Ryo. Kyo is... well, Biscuit does...
Like, extremely violent.
I'm Kyo. Mixed on Kyo at this point.
Her personality is terrible.
I think she's kind of funny, like, in regards to just, like, how she just so nonchalantly acts around Tomoya. Like, she just doesn't give a fuck. And, like, or maybe she does, I guess, like, a lot. She's so weird.
She doesn't care that she's a delinquent, at least. Like, she's the one
she's definitely that actually kind of
she's late. Not really a delinquent because she doesn't skip class, although she is often late.
Yukine is fantastic. I think everyone can agree.
I like how she feels like she's actually running a cafe. She actually says, "Irashaimase."
It's like tea in the reference room is the name of the thing, and it's like she literally is like the relaxing cup of tea in the middle of Clannad. Like, I just feel all warm and fuzzy and relaxed whenever it's Yukine scene. That said, I didn't see much Yukine scenes because getting on her route is like a fucking magnet, and if you even dare try to play with that too much, you're gonna get on that route. Like, get sucked into that room.
Same way it's easy to get sucked into the reference room, you know?
Kotomi's really interesting and weird.
Very
and
weird.
And full of foreshadowing.
Kotomi is the biggest puzzle for me as of now. Hey, like, she is weird.
Well, yeah.
Kotomi is very socially awkward, I would say. But, I guess it's to be expected for the...
She's kind of fun. Like, I definitely get Minagi vibes from Kotomi.
Yes, yes, that's true.
I said we weren't going to talk about everyone, but I think we did. Yeah. We might have forgotten one or two people. But...
yeah. We didn't talk about Yoshino.
Yoshino's a drama queen.
And then we saw that mysterious lady who I guess is Nagisa's mom. Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, there are a lot of characters in Clannad.
There's the old guy.
A lot of characters in Clannad.
Akio, based Akio at the end of the baseball route. Oh my god.
Oh yeah.
Laser Akio tag is so
laser
good.
Laser tag. Oh my god.
It's really fun. It's the one time you see Tomoya taking something utterly seriously.
Yeah, seriously. That one
with
laser tag scene I love.
With like the laser tag and the baseball route and stuff, like, it's so easy to see where Mito's just like, oh, I'm gonna make a VN out of this, and then Little Busters happened. Like, it's very obvious. There's so many things in there. Especially with the whole reason for Yoshino being there and him talking about how he's like, he wants to just send happy memories to everyone, and like, that's what the whole for the baseball route was all about, was that it was a happy memory.
It's like, wow.
Even though they all parted ways, they can all remember what happened on that faded baseball field.
And then he turned that into Little Busters.
Threw down the field.
That is the prequel of Little Busters, yes.
Mm. So I guess the one thing of interest that really comes up in this particular route is Tomoya and his relationships with all the characters. One thing we haven't really touched on yet is Tomoya's relationship with his father and the kind of implications that has for the rest of the story. Joseph Hare actually made this his key point. He asks, how do you think Tomoya's troubled relationship with his father and the absence of his mother affects his relationship with other people? What do you think?
A lot. maybe not necessarily directly in regards to his actual attitudes towards, like, other people. I can't say much for that personally, but whenever you look at, like, just his social status and his living standards, it's very apparent that his current... that where he stands with his father greatly affects how his life works. Like, it's said over and over again that he does, like, I don't consider him a delinquent personally, like, at all. However, true, because everyone of else how does. His life works, it's, you know, it's very black and white that he avoids his father, so he doesn't sleep, so he wakes up late and he goes to school. Like, it's explained, like, very, like, almost three immediately times, after right. his whole tardiness thing is mm-hmm. discussed.
And Nagisa figures it out from the get-go.
Yeah, if you go to Nagisa's branch, he just has it completely
figured out. His delinquent status. Like, he just says mm-hmm. that he's socially accepted as a delinquent. That doesn't mean mm-hmm. that he doesn't take advantage of it, because he does. Especially with hanging out with Sunohara and stuff. Like Sunohara will go and pick on some underclassmen, but then, you know, Tomoya is not stopping him. You know, he's like, okay, he's just watching. Some games, cool.
He's watching because mm-hmm. he's bored. Well, to answer Joseph's question, I don't think it affects his personality. Like, I think even if he wasn't if his relationship with his father was better, his personality would be more or less the same. It's just that the situation changes a lot because of his relationship. Like, he's late to school, so he kind of avoids talking to certain people.
I think it changes it some, like, especially in regards some, to, maybe. Like, his motivations.
Mm.
I feel like a lot of stuff he feels like he just doesn't even want to bother.
Yeah, I guess.
A big theme we're going to see coming out of this vision novel is the idea of family. And it's very apparent from the get-go that Tomoya doesn't have a family. At least he doesn't consider himself to have a family. And, you know, that was all taken away after, you know, I guess he lost his mother at some point in his childhood. Or maybe when he was very, very young. And he had an incident with his father of domestic violence that kind of caused this rift between them to form. And so his only family in this world is freaking Sunohara. How sad.
So the domestic violence is when his dad brought home some sushi, right? Tomoya, daddy's
We're not
home.
Talking about that.
Damn it.
Tomoya!
Okay, anyway. Bank memes
but
aside.
No, yes,
I guess, going back to what Pepe said, like, I feel like it kind of does alter his personality in regards to his motivations. However, there's also worthy of note is that there's definitely nothing, like, caustic or anything. Like, nothing's negative coming out of him from it. Like, in spite, it's kind of just, it's all about him, right? So, in regards to, like, when his teachers, like, he even mentions whenever he's going to school late one time, he's like, it's not a rebellious thing at all. Like, the teachers say, oh, you're trying to be rebellious and stuff, and he's just like, no, it's, I just am that lazy. Like,
yeah.
I don't have motivation.
But he definitely takes advantage of his standing as a delinquent to, you know, get in places whenever he needs to. Like, that one time where he, like, uses it to get out of class by just, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He goes to see Botan.
I mean, yeah. There in that scene, I would agree, like, in how he handled it, like, in making no one do anything about it. But at the same time, in that scene, didn't the teacher, like, literally just tell him to leave? So he was just like,
yeah, he did. The teacher did say leave. But, I mean, essentially, in that situation, the student would generally just be ashamed and, you know, keep quiet and not leave. But he just went up and left.
And, you know, there's, like, when he's helping out Tomoyo and, like, glaring at the judo dude.
Yeah.
Just to get her away.
Even... Because he's an upperclassman, so he's, like, telling, yeah, you know, hey, back off.
Still.
Senpai like powers.
No one wants to mess with the delinquent, really, unless they're really hot shit.
even Nagisa asks him, do you smoke because you're a delinquent?
She asks him if he smokes.
Yeah. He's oh, good. Like... Anyway.
And Nagisa's convinced he's not actually a delinquent, which is very interesting. She just has this amazing eye for Tomoya, and, like, she can pretty much see through all of his lies on the first day they meet. It's just, like, crazy.
Yeah. Not like all the other characters.
No, not the first day, but the first couple of days, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Like, if you haven't checked out the little Nagisa branch off Common Route, then there's definitely a lot of stuff there to talk about. But one thing I really want to draw attention to is his relationship with his father. Do you feel like it makes sense and is justified?
That's,
it's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Because in the few scenes we do have with Naoyuki, his father, he doesn't seem like a really antagonistic person. He seems like a broken man. But, you know, he's always, like, smiling and trying to pleasantly accommodate to Moya. And that's not what bugs him.
Because there's, like, a weird... It's almost like he's got this... I like how Tomoya, he said it was like a weird buddy-buddy vibe, right? Where, like, it's a Tomoya-kun or whatever, instead of just calling him his son, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that Tomoya is probably upset more about the fact that his father isn't a father.
Yeah, which,
like,
is a
he
weird...
He doesn't really have that dad-son relationship.
Yeah, I think the thing here is that Tomoya has certain expectations about how his father should be. Like, he's expecting his father to scold him about being late to school, he's expecting his father to complain about Tomoya being whatever, and he doesn't.
I don't want to say his attitude is right, but I wouldn't say it's not justified. Like, I feel like he has every right to be upset if he wants to be.
He just wants a daddy.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. Like, it's not the kind of thing you'd expect to turn someone into a delinquent. But he just, like, he senses that emotional distance between himself and his father, and that makes him really depressed, which is a bit contrary to how he acts. It's weird.
Every time he remembers that, it's like he starts getting depressed, and he tries to find something else to do to take his mind off it, which is usually going to Sunohara's room.
Yeah. Moving on from that, we have Carafine on the forum has asked us this long key point, and it's a bit too long, so I'm going to paraphrase it. He's basically asking, what do we think about the end of the baseball route and, like, how the baseball game affected Tomoya's life into the future? And so where does he go from there?
My response to that, and I posted this on the forum, is it, like, right before the final batting of the baseball route, Akio basically tells him, do this for the town. And that struck me as important, because one of the first signs that Tomoya says is, I hate this town. Why would he do it for a town that he hates, right? But we end up finding that he does do it, and he does succeed, and he looks at it as a happy memory. And I think the important part of that route is that it shows that because of his interactions, these seemingly useless interactions that ends up in a useless baseball game, gives him the motivation to actually look upon this town as a good thing. Like, even if he has bad memories with his dad, he ends up getting good memories of this town. And, like, I think if it wasn't for the baseball route, he would have probably left this town and find, like, I don't know, be like Yukito and wander around Japan. But my expectation is from the end of this baseball route, he probably stayed in the town and probably found a job there and settled down and, you know,
became Yoshino.
Maybe even participated and talked with other people. I think it opened up his social life, at least.
Yeah. Like, he says he doesn't talk with people much anymore, but he still keeps that memory fond in his mind, so who knows? Like, it's a much more optimistic ending.
It's still kind of a bittersweet ending, I guess, but basically how I look at it is the whole point of it was to... Pepe pretty much nailed it. But as far as the actual, like, outcome, I think all it really does for him is give him something to be happy about. But I don't necessarily think that means he's satisfied anywhere else with his life. So, like, he may just be a boring old adult who doesn't do anything, but in the back of his mind, he'll always remember that at least he had some moment of youthful athleticism and spirit that got him to this point. So,
yeah,
he has a happy memory. So even if you're in the low times, Yoshino
succeeded in giving him
the
a happy
low
memory,
dark
yeah.
times of your life, you can always look back and say, hey, there was that one time that seemingly impossible thing happened that gave me a good memory, so maybe something new and cool can happen in the future.
Yeah, that was exactly what Yoshino set out to do.
He but, set out to do it for Sunohara, thing... not for Tomoya.
It does bring to mind one little thing that may seem irrelevant now, but I'm just going to draw attention to it anyway. Is the scene where you first meet Yoshino, and you can decide to help him out with his work, like installing a street light. Yeah. And this one little scene that struck out to me is where Tomoya is like basically acting a bit rebellious and is like, why would you want to put a street light here? You know, it's fine without it. Why are you, you know, changing the town? And he seems really resistant to it. I don't know why. It's very out of character for him, it would seem, at that point. But it's like he was almost like a sort of, it's not even a nature preservation thing, but it's weird. Maybe we'll talk about more about that later, but I just thought, yeah, it's a little contradiction to his whole I hate this town thing, if you like, he doesn't want it to change.
Well, it's a contradiction to his apathy. Like, it's one moment where it seems like he actually kind of cares about history, where, like, in most cases, he would just kind of not think about it, but in this case, it's more agitated, like a, why bother? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Maybe it's like
it's almost like projecting the apathy, not so much being careless, carefree, or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm overthinking things, but maybe it's because, like, if he sees things changing, he'll expect himself to have to change, and he doesn't want to change, something like that. Might be overthinking.
Reflection himself. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. I'll give you that. Right. So before we wrap this up, let's have a quick shout outs. What were your funniest moments of this common route so far?
One thing that I remembered was how when one of the first interactions with Kotomi is when she's cleaning the library and he says, I feel like a customer in a cafe, and then he tries ordering a hot coffee, and then Kotomi turns it into a shiratori game, right?
Yeah.
And then he has exactly the same train of thought when he visits Yukina's room and he says, one hot coffee.
It's basically
and
our
she
ramen.
Comes, she comes in and gives him a cup of hot coffee.
And then he also asks for the omelet.
He asks for omurice, but you know, oh, we don't serve that here.
Yeah, it's very, it reminded me of Air quite a bit. Like, he would ask for one thing and he actually gets it and he's like, oh shit, so I'm gonna try to ask for something else.
It's the kind of key jokes where they repeat, where they make a reference to something that happened.
Yeah, there's a lot of stands out moments for me. I really like that one level cap line.
Just
caught me off guard. What about you, Biz?
Oh, man. It's hard to decide, but for some reason, this is just something that personally just made me die, was I had stopped playing at a point where you get to pick some way for Sunohara to greet you the next time he sees you, and I think it's the second time he comes and asks you that.
You get two choices, yeah. The first choice changes the options you get in the second choice. So you can get I think it's like 9 different choices you can get. It's crazy. Yep.
And I picked the one that was like be an astronaut, like
That one
or something. And I had actually saved and quit to go to work or whatever at the time. So I had completely forgotten about that. So I come back to reading, and like a few scenes later, Sunohara is like making beeping noises at the door, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh my god,
I think that's the way that
made me laugh so hard.
It's a perfect experience.
It really
goes
to show how silly Sunohara is. Like, that was awesome. Yeah. And, like, the entire time, Tomoya is like, go die. Like, just stop. Please stop. That
push the button, kill yourself.
Other than that, I will always enjoy Masai beating the shit out of the rugby players.
Doria!
AKA beating the shit out of Sunohara.
Yeah, pretty much.
So good.
Denbats! It's a common root is where all the fun shit happens, so it's probably only going to get downhill from here.
Yeah, there's definitely not as much of a focus on comedy as opposed to, like, a focus on actually pretty interesting character developments.
Yeah, definitely. All that Tomoyo and Nagisa stuff we've been talking about, that's just going to be setting the standard for what's to come, I guess. So, I guess we're going to begin wrapping off our first episode of the Kazumatsuri Clannad Book Club podcast. Thanks for joining me, guys, and thanks to everyone who's listening to this. Special thanks also to everybody who participated on the forum discussion. We got, like, was it 91 posts in the common room discussion topic?
Yeah. Bad.
I don't know if all of that was book club, but most of it. Good job, Biz. And also, special shout-outs to particular members that I believe made very good contributions to the topic. Canon, our own Pepe here. We also have Result. Joseph Hare, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. And Naoki Saten. You all produced some really interesting posts there.
Really good posts, yeah?
Yeah, so you are currently our top runners for the Clannad Book Club MVP, where you win our prize pack. But that's still quite a while away, so you need to keep it up.
Hope you can continue the quality posting.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a quick shout-out to anyone who's listening live. I know as you listen to this, it's probably not going to be live, because it'll be on YouTube or whatever, but a quick shout out to DMB, Nash's Jin, Natsume, and Nessum. Whether they may be listening as of now or not, I don't know, but they are here. And also a reminder that we do actually have the ability for you to listen to these podcasts as they are recorded, so you can hear all the stuff that gets cut out. So shout outs to them.
Join the Kazumatsuri Discord to get your inside scoop. So thanks for joining us, everybody. It's been a lot of fun, and I really look forward to the Masai podcast next week. I'm very excited to get into that, our first character.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
I know what happens. It's going to be good.
I know Biz likes Masai. Oh, with that said,
bye-bye, Moo!